Welcome to the new and improved GRCME, a podcast where we interview governance, risk, and compliance thought leaders on hot topics, industry-specific challenges and trends, to learn about methods, solutions, and frankly, what not to do, while hopefully having a little fun along the way. I'm your host, Chris Clark. I'm joined today by LogicGate's CEO and co-founder, and Chief Information Security Officer, Matt Kunkel and Nick Kathman. Prior to founding LogicGate, Matt spent over a decade in the management consulting space, building custom technology solutions to run regulatory risk and compliance programs for Fortune 100 companies. He's a recognized leader in the risk and compliance space. When he's not moonlighting as the CEO of LogicGate, he works full-time as a girl dad of three and finds his escape barbecuing on his outdoor kitchen toys. Nick brings a strong track record of delivering innovative security solutions for small to medium-sized businesses as well as Fortune 100 companies from his time at Dell Technologies, where he oversaw the internal cybersecurity program and MSSP practice for security and compliance. When he's not catching security threats and building security programs, he's catching fish and building handcrafted wooden furniture.
Hey, Matt, Nick, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to GRCME.
Amazing. Thanks for having us, Chris.
Yeah. Well, we heard your intros, but kind of wanted to start with something, maybe a question that we wouldn't necessarily see in a normal introduction on a different podcast. So, you know, we are a GRC podcast, and I think it's always relevant to talk about risk. And so, Matt, what I'd be interested in is, what's the riskiest thing you've done in your career?
Well, I think, Chris, first of all, great question, and excited for the podcast. I'm excited for all of the folks in the risk and compliance community to listen. The riskiest thing that I have done in my career, I think, is this. It's starting LogicGate. It's starting a company. It's taking a leap from, you know, I spent over a decade in consulting, and I had a pretty cushy consulting job at the time. It built up a nice solid team around me, and was doing pretty well from a P&L perspective, had some of the biggest projects at the firm that I was working at called Navigant Consulting at the time. And I said, you know what, I'm going to leave all of that behind, and I'm going to go start a company with two guys that I work with, and we're going to take a zero salary. And I took a zero salary for the first almost 2 years of that company, of starting LogicGate. And we really took kind of a leap of faith that we had built up enough knowledge, enough GRC knowledge, and there was enough of a market need for a differentiated solution, a solution that was much more flexible, that didn't rely on a lot of services cost, that was utilizing new technology that was out there in a graph database, that this would work out for us. But it wasn't 100%, right? I think most, you know, if you look at startups, 90%+ of startups fail, right? So actually it was much more likely that we wouldn't succeed and we wouldn't get here and we wouldn't become, you know, the market leader that we are today. So that definitely was the biggest risk that I have taken in my career is jumping off from the nice cushy consulting job and starting this company, LogicGate.
That's incredible. Well, I can speak for myself and say that I'm grateful that you did that. So thank you so much. So Nick, what about you? What's one thing about yourself that people wouldn't find on LinkedIn?
Good question. I think the biggest thing, I mean, people might infer it, but it doesn't specifically state it, is I'm a geek. Like I enjoy this stuff, like security and tech in general is as much a hobby as it is a job, which, you know, makes this job essentially easy for me. I love it. Like one of my first real jobs in IT was working for a company that was a petrochemical like engineering company. So they would build the PLC DCS systems, mostly for oil rigs. I became really good friends with the R&D team there. They started doing Modbus TCP, where they're bringing things over the network. None of the process engineers, none of the industrial engineers knew anything about networking, but I did. So I got to spend a lot of time in helicopters going back and forth to oil rigs, like helping to, you know, take these systems that they programmed and worked perfectly in a lab and then go make them work in the real life. So I got a really big interest in like just industrial automation, process automation, you know, robotics, all kind of the kind of fun stuff that comes along with that. So just in general, I'm just a geek and I like to play with technology, even if I don't get paid for it. It's just, because I like knowing how things work.
Very cool. Yeah, that's
There's
it.
30 things in there that I had no idea what they were. So I definitely lived up to the name.
Yeah, it's pretty much anything that they refer to now as operational technology. I do that kind of as a hobby and did it as a job for a while too. So it's fun.
That's amazing. And I think it's so cool to hear, like, when your hobbies and your career align, it never feels like you're working a day in your life because there's just joy in what you do. So thank you for sharing that.
Thanks.
So we're trying a new podcast structure this time around. So we're going to have a couple different segments as we go into this. The very first one that we want to start with is something called GRC Mythbusters, where we're going to take a kind of common conception and try to flip it on its head. So starting off with this one, I think there's a perception in the industry that GRC is often seen as a cost center. It is only takes away from the business. It's there to, you know, provide structure and kind of like provide guardrails. But at the end of the day, it's mostly to make sure that you don't get in trouble. What would you say to that?
I would say absolutely not. I would say there are parts of GRC, just like there are parts of every business, that, you know, probably fall more into the cost center. But especially when it comes to things like compliance, I mean, compliance in and of its definition is you're complying to external frameworks to enable go to market. So if you want to sell to, you know, companies that need PCI compliance, you can't open up that pipeline without getting your PCI DSS. Like this is now a direct strategic objective. This now opens up pipeline. Same thing with HIPAA, same thing with, you know, you try to start any SaaS company in the world right now without ISO and SOC 2, and you're not going to sign any deals. Same thing for FedRAMP, same thing for, you know, DoD, RMF, same thing for all, you know, all of the different EU frameworks. So really compliance is more, I would say even more of a go-to-market slash sales motion and business objective, like growth objective motion than anything. And then outside of that, risk management, really just, you know, everything in business is risk management, whether we put it into a risk register or not. This is just more of a, I would say it's more of a formal method of managing what risk we have around cyber or enterprise and trying to cut off the issues before they happen. So, you know, nobody likes paying for insurance until they need their insurance. And risk management is very much kind of, and governance to an extent is kind of like that. It helps the problems, it helps those costly problems from not happening in the first place so that you don't end up having to pay them. So while it could, well, you know, it's a cost center if it operates well and nothing works, right, and nothing bad happens, it's definitely a revenue saver in the end.
Yeah, I mean, the question of is GRC a cost center is, I think, one that I hear a lot. I've heard a lot over the last several decades. And Nick reminds me every day that good security pays for itself, right? And I think he's 100% right. I think our board thinks that he's 100% right. Nick highlighted some of those things from a compliance perspective to be market openers. And how do we get into new growth drivers from a company perspective? And you really can't do that if you don't have good compliance in place. I think the other thing is, if you think about, you know, risk management and security management, a lot of that is to protect the reputation and protect the brand of an organization. You know, the quickest way to tank an org is to have not just a data breach, because that's going to happen with every company at some point in time, having a bad data breach, that guardrails weren't put in place, that just the basics of blocking and tackling wasn't there, right? So, and then lastly is, and what I have advised customers and prospects on is, when we're thinking about what is the ROI justification for governance, risk, and compliance here, and how do we take it out of that cost center? If you do it well, it can truly be a strategic enabler, right? And I think you can make better, smarter, faster, quicker business decisions that are grounded in risk. You know, every company, from the best company in the world, are built on taking risk. They're built on taking strategic bets. That's a startup up to JP Morgan Chase. They take strategic risk and strategic bets every day. And if you're running your governance, risk, compliance, and security programs appropriately, you can help those decision makers and those people that are shaping where we are going and our strategic objective as an organization, help them make better, smarter risk-based decisions with programs around governance, risk, and compliance. So good security pays for itself. Remember that.
Absolutely.
It's an awesome tagline. Yeah. Thank you. And I think it makes a ton of sense what you just said. You both said around like opening those markets, but then also making those decisions. It's been a long time since school, but I remember those, that all, like any of those capital projects were always, there's always some risk of failure there. And it was always built into the calculation that you had to take that risk, but it almost feels like we don't, in the everyday decisions that we make as a company, or not we as a company, but you know what I mean? But when people make as a company, they're almost not taking that risk into effect. And it's the role of those compliance teams to really empower that and help them take the bets that will pay off and almost, you know, hedge them against the downside.
100%. I mean, like I said, the best companies in the world are built on taking good, smart, sound business risk, because there's nothing that's guaranteed in life. You know, you got to weigh the pros and the cons and the downside versus the upside of doing it. And then, you know, you got to take the bet and move forward. And hopefully you're doing it with the largest upside and the lowest downside. And again, you said it, your risk team, your compliance team, your security teams, they should be in the loop and help making those informed risk-based decisions.
Awesome. Well, myth busted, I'd say. Our next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about a rapid fire Q&A. So I'll kind of jump back and forth between the two of you on this, but Nick, starting off, can you speak to how dynamic GRC differs from, say, a traditional GRC program, like in terms of anything in terms of adaptability or changing risks and regulations?
Yep. Yeah. So it's a, so dynamic GRC is really just, you know, if you look at the different organizations within a cybersecurity team, there's the GRC team, there's the security team, and then there's, and a lot of times there's so much data and telemetry that's available to the security teams through the tools that they have that I would say we're in a data glut in a lot of cases. So anybody who's ever had to sign a SIM quote or an estimate or whatever it is, or have to sign a PO for a thing, they know exactly like how much data is coming in. And that's just a small part of the data that gets collected by security teams. Whereas GRC teams generally live in spreadsheets or platforms, and they don't have access to all this data. And they don't, so like all of the context that would go in around risks, around incidents, around controls, like they just, the security teams have to provide, you know, high level summary data to the GRC teams, but the low level data is actually, I think, even more valuable. So the idea behind dynamic GRC is really like, why did you buy an EDR tool if you didn't have a risk around, you know, compromised endpoint? So there should be some risk that is tied to some control that's tied to some tool or technology or process that you put in place, like even staff that you put in place for the security program. So now let's take and let's measure the effectiveness of that with the tools and the telemetry that we have. So, you know, an example that I always give is, there'll be a risk in your risk register around social engineering attack. And then you'll put in controls around it, you know, phishing awareness testing, phishing training, but then, you'll go implement a tool like KnowBe4 based on that. And then to implement those controls for you at the organizational level. And I think what a lot of teams do is they just look to see, is this control in place, but not always the effectiveness of the control. And really like dynamic GRC is switching from, is it a checkbox, yes or no, this control is in place, to how effective is this control? And is this control trending up or down? And then from there, it'll actually change your risk register based on what's the most risky aspects of your business, of your cybersecurity program, right now. So it really allows you to like stay informed on where the risks are versus the old school way of, you know, once a year, once a quarter, twice a year, we just evaluate yes or no, is this control in place, without actually looking at, is it effective? And I think this is, you know, an example from a business perspective that I always give is, imagine if you only ever evaluated your sales team, not based on how much they actually sold, but how mature their processes were. You know, we have a process where AEs reach out. We have an SDR process. We have an intake form process. We have a tool that manages our pipeline. Imagine if you only ever did like the CMMC maturity of, how mature the processes in sales are, but you never actually checked to see, or you never actually tracked how much did they actually sell though with those processes. This is a lot in a lot of ways how security programs are tracked and measured today. Even like even looking at a lot of the NIST type of guide and stuff like that, it's always around process maturity, not around outcomes. Dynamic GRC is really changing that to outcomes based and dynamic risk based on where you are right now versus the traditional way. I think that's the best way I could probably describe it.
Yeah, and I love that analogy of comparing yes, no versus maturity. I guess a follow-up to that would be you talk about it within the lens of almost the second line of defense of the security and compliance teams managing that way. Do you ever see it getting to the point where external auditors start to also perform checks rather than a yes, no, but instead in that similar maturity model or gradient type of approach?
Well, a lot of times, if you go to a Big Four now and ask them to rate your security program, you're going to get that maturity. You're not going to get the actual outcomes. It's just extremely pervasive across the industry, and it is really hard to actually say what is the outcome of something like this. But I think if you switch to instead of saying, you know, I think that this virtual risk officer like metric coming from KnowBe4, I think this number is good. Well, if you have all the data, because you've been tracking it dynamically and you're tying it contextually to incidents and things like that, but you can actually look at it and say, as you know, this risk is trending up. And last time this score got to this level, we started seeing an increase in incidents related to that control. So now that level is too high. We need to start bringing it down. So it's really hard to look at it and say, like, okay, like to what level am I being, to at what level is it actually too risky? At what level is it, you know, not risky enough? I think having that context and data that really provides it in there gives you all of that objective data. Like you can switch from a subjective security program to an objective security program, like data driven, where you can actually say, like, last time we were here, these bad things happened, so that's too high. We need to be under that, and really go from there.
Yeah, thank you. I think it flows really well into kind of the next question. But Matt, you know, in your experience in consulting and working in Navigant, you know, what did you advise? What has been your experience working with customers who have, say, more than one GRC platform? And what did you advise them as your kind of like as their consultant?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot, and the world in software kind of ebbs and flows and swings like a pendulum, right? It's like, hey, we want best in breed technology, so we're going to buy a bunch of point solutions that do different aspects within GRC, or it ebbs back to, hey, we want a platform, right, that can do everything on top of it. And I think where we are in kind of that cycle is much more flowing back to a platform. One, because just, you know, lower total cost of ownership. And I think that is something that is certainly being talked about in the market right now, is how do you do more with less? How do you be more efficient with the tools that you have and the cost structure of those tools? So if I can do everything I can 80% of the way good from a features functionality perspective on a platform, but you know, 50% of the cost structure, then I'm definitely going to go that way. And I think we've seen a lot of customers, prospects, go that approach. The other thing, and the second part of that is really if you have everything on one platform, it's a lot easier to tie that data together and tell that story of how what we were talking about before of how do you make strategic risk-based decisions? You know, how are you able to tie your third-party risk program into your enterprise risk program? How are you able to tie the control, like what Nick said, the controls you had into the regulatory compliance into your enterprise risk program and get that holistic view from a program level perspective and not just look at the individual components of the program within these different software? So I think, certainly think, you know, we are moving much more into a platform first to run a holistic GRC program as opposed to buying a bunch of different point solutions and then trying to dump that data into a data lake to gain the insights upon it.
Appreciate that. There's the all that resonates a ton, I think, with the work I've seen with our customers too. And there's a so kind of a newish term that I heard recently called like data disconnectedness debt, of just the burden that it puts on people when they have to jump between systems. And so having that kind of like centralized system where you're not wasting time manually moving data or manually checking systems, like, it's such an enabler for people doing the work
Well,
and just.
I'd say one other thing too, which is one of the biggest things that we hear about when talking to folks that are running GRC programs that they care about is they care about their customers. And their customers are the end business users that are using that are identifying the risks, that are attesting to things, that are signing off on the policies, right? And if that interface and that experience is not a seamless one, a quick one in which it's very easy to understand what they need to do because their day jobs are not around risk and compliance, they're going to hear about it from those end business users, right? And that is one of the most critical things that I think folks are looking for today in technology solutions. Take risk and compliance out of it. I think all of technology, but certainly in risk and compliance. So if you have only one platform where you have to learn, as opposed to eight different point solutions that you have to learn to do things, it really cuts down on that time, effort, energy, and frankly, experience from an end business user.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think you talk about the people there, and so I think that's a relevant move to our next question. But Nick, I think there's been a lot of pressure for people to do more with less. And so what's really that's risen for the people, let's say, within the security and compliance community is kind of the topic of burnout in the tech world. And so what's your view on adopting technology to increase business efficiencies and, let's say, replace people versus investing in technologies that augment their roles and rather reduce their burnout?
Yeah, and this is a really good question because burnout is very real, especially in security. I think it's of all of the tech jobs, burnout is the highest in cybersecurity. And I know at least personally, I've been burnt out in this career at least twice. I actually called a guy I used to work with, and I was like, I think I'm going to leave cybersecurity completely. And his response back to me was, no, you're way too good at cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is not the issue. The company is the issue. You need to leave the company. Like when I left the company, I felt much better. I look at all things, like the engineering math mindset in me. I look at a lot of things as equations. So you essentially have effort times efficiency equals output. So people times tools equals what you're able to achieve. If a lot of cases, what you have to achieve is set. So you have to set your compliance. You have to meet your compliance requirements. You have to meet your regulatory requirements. You have to have all of these programs in place to sell to customers. You have to have all these programs in place to keep the company and the data and the assets safe. So the output can be set, but to do more with less, like staff is getting cut in a lot of cases. So you end up with this unbalanced equation where, one side is higher than the other. And the math just doesn't work. And that's where you have to start bringing in the tools and the automation and the efficiency. So the more efficient you can make the small number of staff, or you can balance the equation two ways. You can hire much more staff, or you can bring in more efficiency, more automation. And I think this is where a lot of it comes in is you want to bring in a lot of that efficiency and make those processes repeatable, make that technology repeatable, make the people's lives as easy as possible. And then what that does is that it frees up some of the time within those people to where they don't have to, at a recent Gartner conference where I taught, this was actually like part of the keynote, and he was saying in security, a lot of times like people run on adrenaline only and they run in what they call hero mode. So they know that there's not enough staff, there's not enough time in the day to do stuff. They know that if it doesn't get done, the company will have an issue. And they genuinely care and want, like people don't usually get into security. I would say it's changing a little bit, but most people didn't get into security in the first place because they didn't care about security and like about keeping things safe. So they have a genuine interest in keeping it going. So they'll voluntarily work the 60, 80, 100 hours a week to try to like keep things going. And as you put it, you're constantly running on adrenaline, you're constantly running in hero mode. You can't do that. You'll eventually crash. And that's where the burnout comes in. So as you bring in those new tools and you start to bring in that new efficiency, you start to balance the equation where you can actually say, okay, now the output is achieved by what we have, and you can bring those that staff back down into normal business hours and normal working hours, and also achieving the objectives to a level that they feel comfortable with. And that's a big thing, especially with burnout, is I tell my staff this all the time, you can't care more than the company does. So if you don't think that the company is doing security up to your standards, then you can try to raise that risk. But if the company just decides we're never going to do that, it may not be the right company for you. Luckily for me and for and Matt and LogicGate, I have a very high standard and I get everything I need for it. And my staff, feels the same way. But there are times where if you're in a company and you're just the only security guy and they're a 5,000 person IT shop, they're probably not invested in it. And you'll make that decision. So I think for this, it's, getting back to the original root of the question, you have to balance the equation one way or another. You can add a bunch more staff, which is hard to find and expensive. You can add more tool and automation and start to bring it up. And then once you balance that equation, the level of burnout really starts to disappear. And if you do it really well, you can actually start to bring down. So now instead of working 40 hours a week, they're working 30 hours a week, and they've got that 10 hours to decompress and work on new cutting edge stuff, which then everybody wants to do. Everybody wants to work on the cool stuff. And they know that once you hit that incident or that whatever it's going to be, that they have to work around the clock for a couple hours or for like a couple of days, a couple of weeks, a couple of months. They're not looking at it like, I hate this job. They're just looking at it as it's just part of the career, part of what I do. And you really avoid that burnout.
Good to know that we're in balance here, Nick.
Yeah, we are in balance. Luckily, we have a really good process automation tool that we get to use for stuff to make this easy.
That's awesome. Thank you. So kind of pivoting, we talked a little bit about like how we're helping people throughout the company to do their job and like, helping with security. Now talking about how you communicate that upward almost. Matt, when you're talking to the board, what security related like key performance indicators matter most? What do they rely on to measure the impact and the effectiveness of GRC investments?
Yeah. And I love Nick's opinion on this one too. But from my standpoint, I'm going to tell you what they don't want to hear, which is, hi, we have 10,000 vulnerabilities, and we've closed four of those vulnerabilities this month, or 400 of those vulnerabilities this month. That gives them no context on anything. And I have definitely seen reports of that are put in front of boards that talk about that number of vulnerabilities that we have. Number of new third parties that we've onboarded, number of risks that we've mitigated, that really doesn't give the business context. And I think a much more important thing is what we were talking about earlier. How do you tie these things to strategic objectives? Hey, our strategic objective is to get into the EMEA region and to get and do business in EMEA. That means that we need to be ISO compliant. We are 80% of the way there to getting our ISO compliance, and it will be done by this date, right? Or we have our ISO compliance and we just went through it and it had two non-material findings. That's it. That's all they need to know from that perspective, right? Much more of it is, how do you tie compliance, risk, regulatory items, privacy items, security items to business objective and talk in terms of what boards care about, which is, where is the organization going and how are we getting there? And how do the underpinnings and things that we are doing in those business units help support those overall goals and objectives?
Yeah,
Nick?
I'd say, I think Matt hit it right on. When working with boards, realize they have a very short attention span for all aspects, and especially security. So generally, you're coming to them, and it's either red, yellow, or green. And if it's yellow or red, the next thing should be, here's how you can help me. Generally, you're just reporting the status of where you are and picking whatever KPI it might be. Next thing I would say is, generally, in a risk management program, the board sets the risk tolerance. So every business goes through different levels of risk tolerance throughout the life cycle of the company. A company that just started up and only has three employees is extremely risky. Like you were taking, as Matt was saying, zero salary, and you're doing anything and everything and promising the world to try to sign those customers. And you're taking a ton of risk. But then as you start to become larger, and as you start to go into larger organizations or else that, you might start to balance that risk to be a lot less, a lot less risk tolerance. certain groups may have more risk. Sales may have more risk than HR, for instance, but you're still going to set like a lower risk tolerance. But then you get to, let's say you're now a startup, you've gone through your growth stage and you want to go to, you're trying to go for sale or go for IPO. Now the risk tolerance is going to go way low. And so the board's going to say, I don't want the buyer to find any surprises. Like, let's make sure that any risks that we do have, let's clean up and let's not introduce any new ones so that as we start to go through due diligence, everything looks clean and good. And the buyers aren't going to come to us and start, knocking dollars off because they found some risk that wasn't disclosed to them.
Oh, thank you. So kind of last one, and this is basically going to be our version of the newlywed game for the two of you. But when you talk about the CEO CISO partnership, how important is that stakeholder engagement and buy-in and security, particularly in the, through the lens of like driving a culture of security awareness and accountability throughout the organization?
I think massively important, right? I mean, the partnership between the CISO and the CEO is a huge one. And if you really think about it, I mean, the CEO needs to be the spokesperson for security too, right? It starts at the top and it starts at, what a lot of times what the CEO says has a lot of weight behind it and a lot of weight to it. And if a CEO is coming out and signaling to the organization that security matters here, compliance matters here, how our risk tolerance matters here. We can't just be doing things willy-nilly in the wild, wild west, right? That will then take note from all of the other personnel within the organization, right? And the partnership between that CEO and CISO needs to be really, really tight, right? I meet with Nick every other week on topics. We've discussed this about having a security-aware culture. He's asked me to say specific things to the organization, right? As kind of the talking head of the business, right? So I think it is a crucial one, and I think it's one that really starts at the top. And if you really want a culture of security and a culture of risk and a culture of compliance at an organization, those two people need to be in lockstep.
Absolutely. I think it's, Matt hit it on the head. I would say the only thing I would add is it's not just what you say, but what you do. What ET does shows a lot more to the staff than what they say. And also, certain things like if a product went through a product or a service didn't go fulfill all the security requirements, but was still approved to go live, that sets a precedent for other product managers and project managers to say, well, we don't really need to do all these things later. If you look at most security practitioners, I would say legal practitioners fall into this as well too. There's always as soon as a risk is brought up, the first thing that comes to mind is how do we mitigate this risk? How do we make this risk completely go away? But certain risks, you don't have to fix every single risk. Like as Matt said, like running the business and starting the business is a huge risk. And in a lot of cases, what the CEO's job is to optimize for risk. So there's going to be risk there. And in security, we should essentially be doing the same thing and speaking that language when we work with this, like I work that with Matt, is okay, like here's a risk that we have. It could lead to this, but it probably won't lead to this. We can do just this to get, halfway there, and that's probably gonna be fine. And really just like how do we take these things? And not just immediately mitigate everything, no matter how important or unimportant it was, but really start to take a nuanced look at what can we do to optimize for these risks, because that's exactly what the Matt, especially, and the ET is doing at all times.
Thank you. So just kind of appreciate all the insights there. Want to wrap up with just, you all have both have great titles, a ton of experience in the industry. I hope there's a lot of professionals listening to this who are interested in security and compliance and continuing to develop their careers here. I'd love to hear a little bit as like your strategies for success. So, starting off with you, Nick, what is the best piece of advice you've gotten in for how security should work cross-functionally in the business?
Yeah, this is a This is a great question and one that a lot of companies fail at, like quite frankly. So I think in many, many companies that I've seen and been at and worked with, which you end up, I call it the paper tigers. So the security standards, security policies, the GRC team knows them inside and out, knows every control, but nobody else in the business does. Regardless of how many times they've had to sign them in their annual attestations, we'll say that, they just don't know what they are. So they're not going to meet them. So I think a big thing here is really just collaboration ahead of time. So proactively reach out and say, hey, look, like form what we have what's called a security architecture board. We're going to put in a new policy, a new standard. You're going to be stuck, like you're going to be measured against it eventually. So I want your feedback. Invite all of the stakeholders, and we're going to put this through a request for comment period. And we're going to go through every control in excruciating detail. And if there's something that you can't meet, let's discuss on what we can do there. And what this does is it really allows the teams to be set up for success versus something being jammed down their throat. And then you just constantly measure and say, hey, you're failing, you're failing, you're failing, you're failing. Because all that does is just makes the teams back off and say, I don't want to work with security. This is, ridiculous. All they do is just get me in trouble. I think that's one of the main things is just enable the teams to be successful. Don't just constantly force things down their throats and expect them to adapt to it without any type of feedback kind of thing.
Yeah, make them part of the process, right? Like if they're that increases buy-in, absolutely. I love that. Matt, kind of a similar question, but what's one piece of advice you'd have for someone who's interested in becoming a CEO themselves one day?
I'd say be careful what you wish for. No, I'm kidding. I think probably the best advice that I would give is where you sit as a CEO, you really have three stakeholders to manage and manage well. One is your investor base and the stakeholders around that. Two is your customer base and the stakeholders and your customers. And three, and definitely most important, is your employee base and the stakeholders that you have there. And the best CEOs, I think, in the world try to align the expectations and the goals of all three of those stakeholders, right? What is the best thing to do for the employee is maybe not always the best thing to do for the investor. And what is the best thing to do for the investor is maybe not always to do the best thing for the customer. But how do you align those three stakeholders and those three things from the strategy that the company wants to achieve over some period of time in the best possible manner? And if you do that, then I think you can get really the three groups of people that can help build and are necessary to help build the best market leading companies in the world, all rowing in the same kind of direction. And if you can do that, then you get a lot of serendipity happening, and you get a lot of, what a good mentor of mine once said, you get a lot of magic, and you just got to keep your job as a CEO is just keep the magic happening. So I think that would be the best piece of advice that I can really understand your three stakeholders, what makes them tick, and try to create structure and strategy that aligns the three of those things. And then constant communication. You cannot over communicate. I've tried so hard, and I feel like I'm so over communicating, and people are like, I didn't even know that we were doing that. And I was like, well, I only said it 35 times, but you have to constantly, constantly over communicate to all three of those stakeholders.
Incredible. Well, those were all the questions I had. Just want to say thank you again to both of you so much for coming on the show. Any last minute pieces of wisdom for the GRC community?
Just looking forward to you taking the show to new heights and excited about the guests that we're going to bring on this season. And thanks for doing this, Chris. You did a great job.
Awesome.
Yeah,
Thank you both so
definitely. Thanks for
much.
doing this. I love the shirt. And yeah, no, it's really just, GRC is just, it's a function, it's a business function, just like every other business function. It's cross collaborative and just making sure that, as you're thinking about your GRC program and your broader security program, really just finding ways to fit that in with the rest of the business and making sure that it's not just running a silo on the side is the only other thing I would add here.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all in the podcast world.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.